So in a previous life, so to speak, previous line of work, I was working as a carpenter, a builder, and I had a chance to work with someone replacing windows. And I'm going to try and be very careful here, because I know that people both at St Albans Church and Hemel Hempstead Churches may well know this person that I am about to refer to. So I want to try and retain their anonymity. And if you think you know who I'm talking about, you can speak to me afterwards and see if you can guess the right person. But I was working with this person, replacing windows, and they were a bit of a clan. And this person, I can remember, would do all sorts of things, like after we've started work, knowing that the customer was in the next room, would say in a loud voice, "The windows are 2 foot smaller than the opening. Do you think if we brick it up, they'll notice?" I think, what? And when the customer would bring out some drinks and some biscuits, he would stand there and he would start turning the biscuit over. And until eventually the customer would say, "Well, what are you doing?" And he'd say, I am looking for the chocolate." And I think, you can't say that. Anyway, we went. I'll stop with the stories on that one. But we went for lunch one time, and the only place, the nearest place that we found, was a little Chinese takeaway place. So we went in, and there was this Chinese guy behind the counter. And before we'd even had a chance to look at the menu, the Chinese guy says, "Why a wan?" And before, almost said their name, before... Before this person, before I could even think of anything, he suddenly replies, "Why you got?" So there was this question, "Why you want?" And we said it again. And he says, "Why you got?" And I thought, you can't say that. But fortunately, the guy behind the counter took it very well. But it was funny. This was many years ago. I was still living at home with my parents. And so I conveyed this story. And so very often at mealtimes, the question would be asked, "Well, what do you want?" And someone would say, "What you got?" This kind of silly story has kind of prompted me in my thinking of this story found in John chapter 5. Well, we might go into a Chinese takeaway and think, what do we want and what have they got? Well, it's pretty obvious what they've got. It's a Chinese takeaway. It's Chinese food. But with our story, I want you to think about those questions. What do you want and what have you got? You see, we pick up the story in John chapter 5, some time later. So there is a period of time that has lapsed between whatever John has just been writing about and this story now. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now, what has Jesus just been doing? Jesus had been in Jerusalem. If you read through John's account of the sequence, the previous few chapters, you'll see that Jesus had been in Jerusalem. And this was the time where Jesus goes into the temple and he sees the kind of marketplace that people had made this temple into. And so annoyed and enraged Jesus was, he turns the tables upside down. He's tossing everything around and he's just getting everyone's attention. And he's saying, this isn't the right thing to be doing. Look what you've made this temple to be. So he certainly got the attention of the Jewish leaders. And because that was a special occasion as well, it seems as though people that were there that saw it had come down from Galilee, because If you look in the previous chapters, Jesus goes from Jerusalem when he turned over the tables and chairs. Let me turn that back up in case anyone gets a little bit worried about the way I'm behaving with church furniture. After Jesus has been there in Jerusalem, he's turned the tables upside down. He goes up through Samaria and he meets the Samaritan woman. And there's a whole other story there. Then he goes up into Galilee, area where he's been living, he's come from. And people there, it says, knew of what Jesus had been doing down in Jerusalem. They knew. And that's why we get that story then of this official in chapter 4. This official has his son healed. He comes to Jesus and his son is healed. So Jesus has been doing things in full public view already. And then he goes back down to Jerusalem. Is his time for exposing who he is and what he's come for, is it now? Verse 2 of chapter 5. Now, there is in Jerusalem near the sheep gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda. You know what Bethesda means? It's house of grace. It comes from the it's a Greek kind of version, transliteration of an Aramaic and a Hebrew sounding word that means grace. But I read somewhere else in my research of this that while it means grace, it can also mean disgrace. This place of disgrace, these disgraceful people, these invalids, these cripples, there by the pool, waiting for the pool to ripple because they believed that that was the angel of the Lord that made it ripple and the first person in would be able to be healed. Someone going from disgrace to grace. I was interested to read in the book Desire of Ages that Ellen White says of this place and of this situation and story that we can read that there's great crowds of people there, but so many people there must have been something that happened. It happened at least once that someone must have been healed. Otherwise, why would they crowd around? Why would people come from wherever they come from and sit and wait and wait and wait for that water to ripple if actually no one ever got healed? So there must have been someone that got healed at some point in time. But when I read in this book the account in Desire of Ages, there is this suggestion that actually when the water rippled, not only did someone get healed, but some other people got hurt. Even some people lost their lives trying to get into the pool. That's ridiculous. If you don't believe me, have a little read of the book. And it's only a few pages at the beginning of a chapter in the book of Desire of Ages. So if that was true, this is a kind of a bizarre place for me. In my mind, I'm thinking that there's this pool and they have excavated areas and they think that they found where this pool of Bethesda is, this pool of grace, this pool of disgrace, this house of disgrace. Beth means house. They think that they found it and it's about 18 and a half meters long. I was trying to find out how wide it is, but it seems as though actually they build them square. So 16 and a half meters long by 16 and a half. This was a big pool. There is some others that suggest that maybe this pool was a pool of ceremonial washing and cleaning. So maybe not the best place to go for a bath. But there was this great crowd of people, including this guy, this invalid, as it puts it in this translation. He's been like this for 38 years. And somehow he's there at the pool. Maybe he's got friends that have brought him, but they can't hang around. Maybe somehow he's managed to get to the pool, and with this crowd of people, they're waiting and waiting and waiting. When will the pool ripple? I also read again in the book Desire of Ages this suggestion that Jesus coming into this place full of people that need healing had such a heart for these people that Jesus, seeing these people and their need, he wanted to heal them all. But he knew that in healing everyone, it would cause such a commotion in the city that his time had not yet come. But such was the heart of Jesus, he could see this one person, and he chose this man above anyone else to go and heal him. But why this man? Why this man? What do you think? Because it's kind of a bit odd story. We know that, what do we know about the man? He's been like this for 38 years. Don't quite know if he was born like that or something else happened to him. Why do you think Jesus stepped over people? I mean, it was crowded, isn't it? Where does it say that? In verse 3, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. Can you imagine Jesus going there to find that one man? When Jesus saw him, verse 5, one who had been there, an invalid for 38 years was there. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, Jesus heard the story. Maybe he was asking around, what's their story? What about them? Tell me about them. Who is them? Jesus was interested. But why did Jesus pick him more than anyone else in that crowd? What do you think? Are there any clues?
Friendless.
Friendless? Well, I guess maybe if that was the case, then there's a lesson for us. Maybe his friends just, well, they had busy work to do during the day, so they just dumped him in there in the morning and picked him up in the afternoon. But he had no one there during the day to help him into the pool. If that was the case, if Jesus chose him because he was friendless, then maybe there's a good lesson for us. If we're feeling friendless, then Jesus wants to be our friend. But let's pick up on that idea. Why did Jesus choose that man more than anyone else? I think we find the answer in the answer that the man gave, which is about his friends. Excuse me. When Jesus spoke to him and he says, do you want to get well? And this is where this kind of silly story came back to me in my mind. Yeah. What do you want? Yeah, what a stupid question, really, isn't it? Yeah, when you go into a Chinese restaurant and someone says, what do you want? I want a Chinese meal. You know, when Jesus comes to this crowd of people that are disabled, that are ill, that have got health problems of some sort or another, and the rumor is that if you get into the pool quick enough, when the pool ripples, you're going to be healed. You know, there's the reason why the people are there. What a kind of stupid question, isn't it? Jesus coming to this invalid and he says, do you want to get well? Kind of seems a silly question, or maybe a rhetorical one at least to me. But Jesus asks the question, what do you want? Do you want to get well? What does the man say? Sir, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. If it is true what it says in the book Desire of Ages, there seems to be mayhem that happens. the pool ripples. There it is. And people are trying to get in and first in and pushing people. It does say in the Book of Desire of Ages that people, women and children, she states, are pushed out of the way for people trying to get into that water. People thinking of themselves more than anyone else. I'm more important than anyone else. Can you imagine that happening in this country? Well, maybe it could nowadays, but in some societies, let's put it that way, we might have a ticket system, wouldn't we? You turn up at the pool of Bethesda hello, Nathan, and what seems to be your illness? Okay, we'll record that, and your ticket number is 47. And then you realise that up on the board, we're at number 18. Got a long wait, but in a nice orderly queue, we jump into the water every time it ripples. Everything's in order. But not so there. There's mayhem that happens. And amongst all that mayhem, this man is laying there on his mat, probably just a blanket. And he's laying there wishfully thinking that somehow or another, someone would help him. Because he can't help himself. And that is the reason that I believe that Jesus went to that man more than anyone else. Because Jesus can help us when we get to that point that we realize that in and of ourselves we are helpless. We cannot do it. We need some extra help. And that's when Jesus came into this man's life. Do you want to get well? Can't do it by myself, the man says. Once that man says, I can't do it myself, Jesus was able to offer him the help that he really needed. Wilma said about props, she didn't know it was for this one, not the other one, not the children's story. So you imagine the man, he's got his bed there and he's laying there. He's laying and he's equipped, and he sees the water over that way somewhere, and he sees it rippling, but no, not this time. Can't do it myself. So he's feeling a bit fed up, and he waits and waits and waits a bit longer. And then suddenly, everyone's saying, the water, and he's trying to get up. No. Still can't do it. Still can't move quick enough. I can't do this under my own strength. Jesus doesn't say, don't worry, I'll give it an extra little ripple. Jesus just says to the man, get up, take your bed, get out of here. Seemingly without hesitation, this man just suddenly realizes, I can get up, I can move, and I didn't do it of my own working. He gets up, he grabs his bed, and he's off. We'll come back some other time about this whole issue of Sabbath and the contention that these spiritual leaders had that he was carrying his bed. Did you see? They don't question, isn't it great news that you're walking again, Mr. Invalid? No, they criticize him for carrying his blanket. What do you want? What has Jesus got? I believe the story is embedded right in the middle there. It's this whole lesson for us that Jesus is waiting and wanting for us to come to that point to realize that there is nothing that we can do in and of ourselves to heal ourselves. There's nothing that we can do in and of ourselves that restores that sin problem that separates us from God. And it's only when we come to that point of saying, what can I do about it? That Jesus can say, nothing. That's the point. Now get up and get going. Jesus physically healed that man that day. He also gave him hope in a place full of disgrace, full of invalids, full of people that needed help, but they were just thinking of themselves, pushing others out of the way in order to be first in that pool. Jesus says, stop thinking of yourself. Stop thinking of yourself. We get that again as we read later on in that story, verse 14, where it says, later Jesus found him in the temple. Again, reading in the book Desire of Ages, it suggests that this man was taking in the temple. We're only talking of a few hundred meters away from where this pool was to the temple. But Jesus comes and finds the man in the temple. And what's the man doing in the temple? He's bringing a sacrifice to God. Such was the system and custom of the time. But do you know what he was bringing? It doesn't say it there in the Bible, so maybe we need to take this with a bit of supposition. But the suggestion in the book Desire of Ages is that he was carrying both a sin offering and a thank offering. And for those of you that may remember when I talked about Cain and Abel, you remember the difference between Cain and Abel? Both were acceptable offerings, but one was a thank offering and one was a sin offering. You should never bring a thank offering to God without a sin offering. We never thank God without recognizing our need of God. Jesus found him in the temple. He says, stop sinning. We're not told about what that sinning was all about. But if we can tie it back into this story, this response that this man gave, how can I do it myself? Jesus says to the man, stop thinking of yourself. What is sin? I know I keep trying to teach you. What is sin? Sin is any time that we think we know better than God. When we start working our own salvation, when we start thinking, my way of healing is to get into that pool again. To be first. We can't do it of ourselves. So stop thinking that it is of your own efforts. And rely on Jesus. Because when we do that, he can step into our lives and say, now I've got you where I want you. Get up, be healed, and get going. What do you want? Do you want Jesus to come into your life and give you healing? And stop relying on yourself.